From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, electronic harassment with Roger Tulsis. But here's what's happening. Well, normally I would not begin a program with such a gruesome story, but I've got to tell you, this sets the tone for what I think is happening all around this planet right now. People are truly whacked out. Listen to this one. A madman bludgeoned his girlfriend and her adult daughter to death with a hammer in Queens, New York, early Wednesday, in a massacre that could be heard down the block because he believed the women were witches who cast a spell on him. Police arrested Carlos Amarillo, he's 44 years old, on charges of criminal possession of a weapon and murder. He actually thought they were witches, so he killed them. The U.S. spy agency chief's calling on Congress to draft stricter regulations on how retailers and other private businesses should inform government agencies and customers about big breaches of personal and financial data. The intervention by the intelligence chiefs came as Attorney General Eric Holder confirmed that the Justice Department was investigating the massive hacking of the consumer data from the number three U.S. retailer Target Corporation, claiming and pledging that they will catch the perpetrators. It was a disaster during the holiday shopping season. Let's check in with the expert on the internet, Lauren Weinstein. Lauren, first and foremost, these hackers, how do they do what they do? And they're so good at it.
Yeah, I mean, part of what's going on is that they're good, but they're not. They don't have to be geniuses because they're dealing with infrastructures, particularly the U.S. credit card infrastructure, that is fundamentally weak to begin with. I mean, there are ways that have been known to harden these systems. In Europe, they've been using chip-based credit cards for many years. They have a different situation. Their legal liability for purchases are different and everything. But still, there are better cryptography systems. There are better transaction systems. And we've just gotten sloppy about this here.
Yes.
Because when there are breaches, it's generally easy to kind of pass the costs along. You know, you can say, you know, every time you have a breach and you say, well, you as a customer are not going to have to pay anything. That doesn't mean somebody isn't paying. Somehow it goes to the merchants, back to the banks. Everybody's fees are bumped up a little bit as a result. And we're facing a situation now where we really just have to bring our technology up to snuff. That's not going to cure all these problems mm-hmm. because there's always going to be ways to game these systems. But we can certainly make them better than they are now.
And Lauren, the Attorney General says, we're going to get these hackers.
Yeah.
How do they get them?
Yeah, I don't know that they're going to get them. I mean, right now it looks like this probably points to Russia as the focal point for this particular attack. I'm not so sure that Putin is going to be all that, you know, cooperative when
yeah.
it comes to something like this. But, you know, it's certainly worthwhile for DOJ to be looking at this problem because this is costing United States consumers a lot of money. So if nothing else, even if they never catch the guy, whether it's a teenager or whatever over in Russia that probably did it or wherever they are, if we can get recommendations that will help speed the process of improving our own credit card networks and our own financial networks, that's probably going to save us a lot of money and grief in the long run.
I still like my theory that it's possibly somebody at a credit card manufacturing company who will make a lot of money.
Oh, well, the transition to new cards, which is going to happen. We are going to be moving toward chip-based cards. The number I have seen for the total cost of doing that is $10 billion.
Wow. All right, Lauren, thanks for the information. Helicopters taking to the skies to search for stranded drivers, Humvees delivering food, water, gas, or a ride home to people who are stuck on the roads after a winter storm walloped the deep south. Students spent the night on buses or at schools. Commuters abandoned their cars. They slept in some of them. That wasn't good because it was too cold. Interstates turned into parking lots. The roads were frozen. The problem all started when schools, businesses, government offices all let everybody out at the same time. So people waited in gridlock. Snow accumulated. The roads froze. Cars ran out of gas. Tractor trailers jackknifed. It was just a disaster in the South. Stem cell researchers jumping for joy because of a major scientific discovery with the potential to start a new age of personalized medicine. Scientists in Japan showed stem cells can now be made quickly by dipping blood cells into acid. Stem cells can transform, they say, into any tissue and are already being trialed for healing the eyes, heart, and brain research as well. Heavily promoted male hormone products may be sending men flocking to the stores, but take heed, their next stop may be the emergency room, according to a new study. The research confirms earlier studies that show that men with heart disease double their risk of heart attack soon after they start using testosterone gels or other supplements. And testosterone doubled the risk in men over 65 with or without heart disease. Take heed on that. Imagine this. You're on a cruise. You're having a great time. And then everybody around you gets sick. Maybe you do. The ill-fated Royal Caribbean cruise ship has returned home with a bad mark. Nearly 700 crew and passengers fell ill aboard the Explorer of the Seas, the highest number of sick people reported on any cruise ship in two decades. At least 630 passengers, 54 cruise workers got sick. Some passengers suggest that the outbreak may have been worse than even reported. Let's check in with none other than Captain Kelly Sweeney. Kelly, I've been on one cruise. Nobody got really sick. It went well. But how does this happen?
Ahoy, George. Well, the incident on the Explorer of the Seas, although one of the biggest of its kind, like you say, in nearly 20 years, is not unusual. And this kind of occurrence happens regularly. Now, it's the norovirus, and this is, it's not verified, but it's suspected to be a norovirus outbreak, is a very difficult virus to eradicate. There was a case a couple years ago, 2012, I believe, a Princess Cruise Line ship had a norovirus outbreak, came into port. They spent a lot of time cleaning the vessel and making sure it was okay. They declared that it was okay to bring the passengers back on. They loaded the passengers on for the next cruise, and they had another outbreak the following cruise, back to back. So whether it's brought on from the passengers, whether it's brought on by the crew members, they go to all kinds of different ports, many of them third world ports. So it's anybody's guess, but when it hits the ship, it's a major problem. You know, it's a little known fact, George, that the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, does not routinely require an international health certificate nor a health inspection for nearly all the ships coming into our ports from foreign places. The last inspection on the Explorer of the Seas was in July of 2013, nearly 6 months ago. And I feel very strongly about this. As a matter of fact, I encourage the listeners to go to professionalmariner.com, where one of my recent articles, and they can see it there online, calls for increased health inspections on board commercial vessels coming into from foreign places. And I agree with the National Institute of Medicine, which has gone on record stating that the CDC no longer sufficiently protects the U.S. population against microbial threats. And in my opinion, that includes the norovirus.
Well, what's so baffling to me, Kelly, let's assume one individual was sick, came on that ship, and then these 700 people got sick. If that one person walked the streets of New York breathing on people, would we get 700 people just like that sick on land?
Well, it depends on who they come in contact with, George. The norovirus is extremely rampant in areas that are enclosed, cruise ships, convalescent homes, places where people are together.
And you can't get away.
And they can't get away. But you know, I found it very interesting and actually a little bit disconcerting that they didn't quarantine all the people that were sick. There were people who admitted to being ill that they left and let go out into the public, and now they're dispersed in the general population without verifying that they're not sick anymore, they're not carrying the norovirus, transmitting it to their friends, family, or coworkers, or people, you know, if they work in a restaurant or whatever. So it's a serious problem. In cruise ships, like I said, it happens regularly on them. And in my opinion, one of the ways that our government needs to really start dealing with it is increased health inspections on foreign ships coming into our waters.
All right, Kelly, thank you so much. A New York City man bit off more than he could chew when he smuggled nearly 40,000 piranhas into the United States. He pleaded guilty in federal court in Brooklyn to smuggling the deadly piranhas back from 2011 to 2012. Piranhas are freshwater fish originating in South American rivers. They are described as extremely aggressive, territorial. As a result, 25 states have either banned or regulated piranhas, making them illegal to own or sell. Wow. In a moment, space historian Robert Zimmerman talks with us. He's hopping mad. He'll tell you why when he comes right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Why is Robert Zimmerman so ticked off? Let's check in with him. He's the award-winning space historian. He writes a number of articles, author of Genesis, The Story of Apollo 8. His website, behindtheblack.com. I go to it for all my space information. And Robert, why are you upset?
Hi, George. Yeah, I'm a kind of, it's very straightforward. I don't like getting lied to. Of course, in our modern world today, that's going to make me angry a lot, unfortunately. But in the case of science especially, I do not like being lied to. And what I have found, I write a great deal about space, but my focus isn't just space, it's science. I'm a science writer. I do a lot of articles about science and technology and other things relating to the field of science. And one of the fields that I have been studying now very extensively for the last decade to try to understand what's going on there, and I've written some articles about it, mostly focused on the sun and its lack of activity in this sunset cycle. Is the climate change field. And that is a field that everyone, I think, is a little bit baffled over. They scratch their heads, what's going on? And for a long time, I scratched my head, what was going on? I'd read reports, and my sense of science and the amount of uncertainty that goes into science, George, told me that there were too many people speaking too certainly about what they thought was going on, that the world was, we were all going to die from global warming. It just didn't ring true to me, but I didn't really understand the field initially. Well, I've spent a lot of time now understanding the field, and I really do understand it pretty well. And what I keep finding, which is what's got me hopping mad, is that the global warming activists, scientists within the climate science field, too often are frauds. They fake their data, they fudge it, they're dishonest, they work to destroy the careers of people that disagree with them. And I just recently, and I've posted on my webpage Behind the Black a few links, I just put one up again about an hour ago, in fact. There's very clear evidence now that both at NOAA and at NASA, the areas and the agencies, sub-agencies within both those agencies that focus on climate data, the scientists in those agencies have been consistently fudging the data to turn cooling trends real. The raw data, in many cases, suggests a cooling trend for the last 75
well,
years.
Well, this year alone, it's been the coldest in 20 years in most areas.
We've seen there's actually data that suggests cooling trends, the raw data. And what these scientists have been doing is fudging the data to turn the cooling trends into warming trends. What they do is they adjust the yearly amounts in the past to make it cooler, and then they'll push up the more recent amounts by slight amounts to make it warmer, and the end result is cooling goes to warming.
Well, now, why are they doing that?
That's
the 64,000.
We can talk about a lot of things. Now, it's very possible. It's, if I want to give them the benefit of the doubt, it could be that they passionately believe, honestly and sincerely, that global warming is happening.
And caused by man.
And caused by man. And because they believe that, they are allowing that bias to twist their work, and so that they are, this is, I'm being as
so they're skewing. They may be skewing the data because of their belief system.
Yeah, but this could be an honest skew where they're looking at the temperature gauges and they're trying to figure out what the honest number should be, and they keep skewing it. And this is operator error. That this is a known problem in science, operator bias. You have to watch for it all the time, and it could be happening innocently. However, I'm becoming increasingly suspicious of this. The ClimateGate scandal from 5 years ago indicates very strongly that it's not unintentional or innocent. In that case, some of the biggest names in the climate field were caught red-handed conspiring together to destroy the careers of anyone who disagreed with them and to squelch the publication of any skeptical paper, no matter how justified or reasonable. So there's evidence that this happens in the field. What makes me even stronger think that there's fraud going on here, George, is that when asked about why are they making these adjustments, they never come up with any real clear explanation. If these adjustments in the data were legitimate, you'd expect some to go up, some to go down. You know, weather stations they figure out there was something wrong with the station, so they have to adjust the numbers. There's legitimate reasons to make adjustments, but the changes always work in the direction of making it look like the climate is warming. Always, there's almost no evidence of any adjustments that work the other direction.
Let me read this quick story that came over today. Let's get your reaction to it.
Sure.
They say that penguin chicks, little tiny penguin chicks, are dying as a direct consequence of climate change. They say drenching rainstorms, extreme heat are killing the young birds in significant numbers. The long-term study looked at climate impacts on the world's biggest colony of penguins over a 27-year period. My point is it's probably very possible that we're getting extremes both in the summer and in the winter, warm and cold, but it's not necessarily created by man. It could be an Earth cycle.
That's possible. The fact is, at this moment in time, George, there's no documented evidence that temperatures or climate events are becoming more extreme. That's another thing that gets me hopping mad. I mean, I've analyzed this on my webpage. There's a great post I put on my webpage called The Fantasy of Extreme Weather, where I analyzed it very deeply, where there was a whole slew of articles talking about how we're all going to die from extreme weather. But one of those articles admitted to the fact that at this moment in time, scientists have no documented data to indicate extreme weather events are increasing. As example, in the last year, George, we've had the United States had its lowest recorded tornado count in 50 years.
And no hurricanes.
We haven't been hit by a hurricane now in almost a decade on the North American continent. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't extreme hurricanes occurring and cyclones occurring worldwide,
right.
But the counts are not. There's no evidence that extreme events are occurring at larger amounts. And on top of that, they claim that, yes, penguins are dying because of climate change. But they also have finally admitted the climate field, and they have no explanation for this, that there has been a pause now for almost 18 years in global warming, that there has been no significant warming in the temperature since the late 90s. Now, now we're getting close to two decades of no warming. That's a significant period of time. All their climate models, every single one of them, predicted that the climate would warm as the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere increased. And not one of those models is turning out to be accurate or correct. They're completely wrong. They don't make they don't work. And so, you know, once again, so penguins' population is dying. Well, you know, I'll give you another example, polar bears. Polar bears are the cutesy symbol of the global warming industry. Whenever they want to talk about how it's destroying the world, they show a cute polar bear and how it's going to die. It's on an ice.
On a little ice that's shrinking.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Arctic ice cap has been shrinking in the last two decades, though it recovered a little bit, somewhat this last year. But do you know that the polar bear population right now is thriving? It has been for the last decade. And in fact, there's even some studies and you can do a search on polar bears on my website, and you'll come up with the link. There are some studies that suggest that the population has gotten so large, it's reached the carrying capacity of the environment, which means they'll die because there's too many bears.
It's like when they go deer hunting. I'm not a deer hunter, but they have to cull out the deer because there's too many.
That's right. And so there's evidence of that. Similarly, the grizzly bear in Yellowstone is prospering. In fact, it's doing well enough that the U.S. Geological Survey is considering delisting it from the endangered species list. Well, environmentalists like the Center for Biological Diversity, which is one of the biggest dishonest environmental activist groups that exists, they claim, no, we mustn't delist it. It's still endangered.
Hold on, Robert. We're going to hit this break. I want to talk more with you about climate change and also get your views on some other space issues. Robert Zimmerman with us for a couple hours tonight right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Robert Zimmerman with us. Robert, it appears that, you know, so much information that has leaked into the climate change arena has to do with, you know, pollution. Pollution that, of course, you don't, I don't, nobody supports, nobody wants. But they use pollution as the reason for why we have this incredible climate change. And I think that's wrong.
Well, you know, George, let's be specific about it. What kind of pollution are we talking about? You know that pollution, most pollution, scientists call them aerosols, actually works to counter global warming. It actually cools the temperature. So if you've got bad pollution like soot and other things in that China has significant amounts of, you're actually helping to cool the climate. It's actually one of the uncertainties of the climate change field is they don't know exactly how much aerosols or pollution hurts the climate. But they're now trying to define carbon dioxide as a pollution, and it isn't a pollution. It's actually essential to our survival because plants need it. In fact, this is another thing that gets me hopping mad, George, is that there is no real documented evidence anywhere that I – very little, at least. The little I've seen isn't very useful to indicate really how warming would really hurt us.
Well, plants suck in the carbon dioxide and they spit out oxygen.
Yeah, we breathe it.
What would happen, theoretically, what would happen if we had no vegetation on this planet?
Well, we'd be dead.
We'd go to.
That's it. And the interesting thing is that this increase of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere for the last 50-some-odd years, there's evidence that it has actually made the planet more lush. Great larger-sized forests, more crop yields. There's evidence of that. It's not solid evidence. This is science. There's uncertainties, but there's evidence of that.
Well, didn't we have even higher CO2 levels during the dinosaur period?
When it is thought that the planet was like a jungle, very lush. It was also considered to be warmer. But there's a lot of things about carbon dioxide in terms of the climate change debate that people should be aware of. For one thing, carbon dioxide is a trace gas. It is not the thing that the global warming scientists believe will actually warm the climate. What they think will happen is the carbon dioxide increase will interact with the water in the atmosphere, which is the real global warming greenhouse gas. And the water, which is the major component of this, the water will cause the climate to warm. But there's no evidence that really happens. And the second thing you got to know about carbon dioxide, George, is that historically, I mean, talking about now on geological time, over millions of years, whenever the climate is warmed, the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere increased after the warming. So it wasn't carbon dioxide causing the warming. Carbon dioxide increased because of the warming. So it's not a causal factor, at least in the past. It's been a consequence of warming. So you got to understand these factors to understand that there's incredible uncertainties in this field, and anyone who says we know what's going on is downright lying. That's all there is to it.
Well, now, why? Why are the climatologists doing this, though? You know, we talked about this earlier.
Yeah.
What's the real reason behind it? I mean, are they specifically making money? I think not.
They are. There is... They love to talk about, you know, the big oil and fossil fuel industries paying bucks to the climate skeptics, but I'm a climate skeptic, and please, trust me, I'm quite poor. I don't get
I don't even
money.
Think you get a discount on gasoline.
No, I don't. Not unless it's Costco giving it to me. So, no, where I get my multi-billion dollars of government funding going into the global warming climate field. And the government wants a result. And the result the government wants is more warming because that justifies power and more laws and more control. And so they want a result. And so, you know, some of it's corruption for the sake of power.
And
some
one day,
global warming scientists who believe in global warming and will fudge their data to get that result.
And one day, a worldwide tax.
Yeah. Oh,
I'm
yes.
Convinced.
That, yes, that you're right. That's one of the goals. The carbon tax. They've been pushing that now for a decade. The UN's been pushing it. You know, the climate, the woman in charge of climate change at the UN thinks that communism is the best way to solve this problem, that the democracies don't really do it right. You need dictatorial control to really deal with climate change. So it's a lot of it's power, and a lot of it is money. There's grants involved. Some of it isn't trying to be turn us into a socialist communist state. Some of it's just simply global warming scientists. Knows that the way he'll get the biggest grant support from the government is to come up with a result that says global warming is happening. That's what's going on, I think, at NOAA and NASA more than anything else. To keep their funding going, they've got to have a crisis. The only crisis they can come up with is global warming. If the climate isn't a disastrous factor, their thinking is that their worry is that the government will stop funding their research.
Well, they may be right. All right, let's wrap up this global thing, and I've got some space questions for you, Robert. Then we're going to take a full hour of phone calls with you. I mean, there's no question it's getting colder. And we've had some warmer summers as well, so that we've got this variety. I think a lot of this has to do with the sun.
Yes, George, that could be the case. I notice I'm being a little bit tentative there. I've been writing about this on Behind the Black and in magazine articles now for almost a decade, that the sun is less active, and whenever the sun is less active, produces fewer sunspots, there is circumstantial evidence that the Earth's climate cools. And interestingly enough, in the last half decade, the sun became extremely inactive. We're having one of the weakest maximums of sunspots in 100 years. Coincidentally, that was a cold period 100 years ago. But the problem there is, and if you're going to be honest about science, you got to be really honest. And the problem that we have is that evidence so far gathered doesn't show the sun dimming enough to really cause the climate to cool as much as it appears to. So how do you link the two? And that's something scientists are puzzling over. They really don't have a solid answer yet. There's some theories. But, you know, unlike Al Gore and a lot of corrupt global warming scientists like Michael Mann, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, well, that's the answer. We don't know. There's suggestions that there's a link, and we have to look at this closely, and it is possible that the sun is going to go into a grand minimum in the next solar cycle, where we won't see sunspots for 60 years, and when that happened, we had a little ice age 400 years ago. So there is circumstantial evidence. But I'm not going to say to you, well, we're going to head for an ice age right now. I don't think we know at the moment. And I think it's a mistake to say we know, because when you do that, you can't do good science work. You start to bias your results.
Well, yesterday we had a mini program on the flipping of the magnetic poles.
Okay.
And that over 200 years, it's flipped about 15-20%.
Yes.
More to come.
Yeah.
But that
right.
15-20% could be enough to create all this climate change too.
Well, I wouldn't agree, George. The magnetic field causes problems for us if it should do a flip and go away for several thousand years, because it protects us from radiation from the sun, protects the atmosphere from radiation from the sun. But it's actually not a factor in climate, as far as I know.
I had a report yesterday that scientists say that if it does a complete flip, it'll have massive weather changes.
Well, you see, what would happen if went
because the solar winds
flip,
come through.
George, what happens is it slowly gets weaker until it disappears, and then it slowly comes back.
Then it now, flips
on geological
back.
Time, that's not a very long period of time. But in terms of human history, it's you know, might talk about several thousand years. That's a quick flip for the sun, for the Earth's magnetic field, but for us, it's a long period of time. Well, if you have no magnetic field for a thousand some odd years, the atmosphere is exposed to the solar wind and the radiation and the magnetic field of the sun, and that could affect the atmosphere. What it will do to the atmosphere, I'm telling you right now, no one really knows. We do know the radiation that we'll experience could be harmful without question. I think anyone is telling you that they know what will happen in that period of time, I think is stretching their knowledge a bit.
The Chinese rover looks like it might die. It may not survive the harsh cold of the moon. They did a pretty good job getting it there, though, didn't they?
It is hard. It's rocket science. I think the Chinese did a spectacular job. For the first time, they attempted to do something, and they've been really successful. They've had orbiters that have been very successful, and this was their first attempted lander rover, and they got it to work, and they got it to work on the moon's surface and send back data. Right, in, you know, the moon's surface is in some ways much harsher than Mars because you go through those 2 week nights where you have no exposure to the sun, no solar power. It's a very harsh environment when there's no sun for 2 weeks. And so to keep a rover going over the lunar night is difficult. They managed to do it the first lunar night, George, but to do it a second lunar night, it looks now that when it went into the second lunar night, there was a problem with communications and they were not able to set the rover up properly to hibernate. And therefore, they're fearing that when the night ends, it won't come back to life properly. And that would be a shame, but I think their achievement is stupendous and to be honored. And they will be back with more things right now. The Chinese program is moving forward very successfully.
Where the heck, Robert, is our program?
Well, you've heard me say this before. I don't really want a program. I actually think the American space program is on the verge of a breakout of absolutely stupendous proportions.
When?
Well, it'll probably take another 3 more years. Well, it's starting to happen now, and over the next 3 years, we're going to start to see it happening. And it's not going to be a program. It's not going to be governmentally run and dictated. What we're going to see is the American way of doing things, a chaotic capitalist system where many companies are making money from providing services, not necessarily to even the United States, but maybe to other countries as well. And we're the ones that build it. We're the ones that do it. We're the ones that design it. And we sell our product to everybody else. That, I think, is about to break out significantly. We have seen signs of it everywhere right now. And I'm gritting my teeth in anticipation over the next 3 years, George.
Well, that could be exciting. It could be exciting. So what are the plans to go to Mars? 2020?
Well, you see, that's the thing. If you have a program, you're dependent on the government to set up these plans, and the government has been putting forth, our NASA and federal government has been putting forth plans for the last 40 years since the lunar landings, mm-hmm. and the Apollo landings, and most of those plans have just not borne fruit. They've been a failure. What's happening now is that you've got private companies building spaceships, rockets, a cargo vessel.
And doing a great job.
Doing a great job. And those various companies who are working along these lines, there's also companies developing lunar mining as well, all for profit. They're offering their services to everybody. So, for example, Sierra Nevada is a company that's building for NASA. NASA is trying to get multiple ways to get astronauts to and from the International Space Station. And Sierra Nevada is one of those companies, and it's building something called Dream Chaser, which is a mini shuttle designed specifically to bring cargo up and down. And they're building it for NASA, but they're not. It's not NASA-owned. It's owned by Sierra Nevada, and it'll be a shuttle that they can sell not just to NASA but to anyone. So they've already signed agreements with both Germany and the European Space Agency to research the possibility of using Dream Chaser as well to launch European and German astronauts into space. So they've got a product and a spaceship that they're willing to sell to anyone. It's American-made and it's American-designed. And that, I think, is where our real future will be, because you want to go to Mars. If you start making a lot of profit doing it, you'll be able to go to Mars eventually without any problems at all. I mean, that's where Elon Musk's heart lies. He wants to go to Mars. He's wanting to go to Mars from day one once he sold PayPal and was a multi-billionaire. But to get to Mars, he's got to have a viable profit-making company in the rocket business. And he's developing that now with SpaceX and the Falcon 9 rocket. He hopes to actually do a first demo launch of his Falcon Heavy rocket sometime this year, if that happens as scheduled, or even if it happens behind schedule. But if it happens, and I am confident it will, it will give that company the most powerful rocket since the Saturn V. And they will be able to launch it at prices that are equivalent to what a standard rocket has charged, rocket companies have charged for the last 40 years.
And cheaper than what the Russians would charge us to take somebody up to the ISS.
Yes. Cheaper than that, cheaper than the Europeans with their Ariane V rocket much cheaper. That's what his goal is. And that's what SpaceX's goal is. And if they do that, that suddenly makes the possibilities of what you can do in space humongous and uncountable. You can't even imagine what's possible because they'll be out of the woodwork. You're going to suddenly see hundreds and hundreds of companies appearing who suddenly can afford to put payloads in space, both manned and unmanned, to do things where they can make money. And so suddenly the whole solar system opens up to us. And so that's what I see happening. So I'm very excited about that. I'm not looking for a space program. I don't want a program because a program is a limited vision idea. Mm-hmm. It's one president's idea or maybe a set of bureaucrats at NASA's idea of what to do. And no matter how sincere they are or visionary they might be, it's almost certain in the real world they'll get it wrong. Better to have many people following their dreams in a chaotic manner, that's the American way, and out of that chaos, the best things will come and we'll get it all done.
What do you think of governments all getting together, not just like the Europeans are doing, but everybody, the Russians, the Chinese, India, all over the place, and we all get together like a federation like you had in Star Trek?
I think it's the most fascist, unproductive way of doing things. I don't like it. I don't want it. Once again, when you set it up in such a manner, you've said that the governments will dictate to everyone how it should be done, and they will control everything. And I don't want that. What I want is freedom to rule here. You know, look, a good example is the United States. The shuttle program, when it was first proposed by NASA, was going to reduce the cost to orbit. And the way they were going to do it was they insisted that all American commercial satellites had to be launched on the shuttle. So we had no longer an open market. We had a monopoly by NASA. Well, it didn't reduce the cost of launch. It destroyed the American commercial market. We no longer had it until SpaceX came along this year. There were no commercial launches really by the United States, by any American company.
No, not at all.
So I don't want that. The reason governments are trying to push that is a power play. They would like to control space and have it in their little hands. They don't want others to be able to dictate terms, and I don't want that. I want chaos.
So you love the free marketplace.
I love freedom. I want to be very clear on that. Freedom. Free market is one way to say it, but freedom is the real people following their dreams. They make money on it, but they also follow their dreams.
What about the Black Ops space program?
Now, that's a wholly different other world. I mean, there you got different issues. There you get the national security concerns of the United States, the general welfare and the defense of the nation, and it gets much more complicated. It's a very big program. But it isn't fixed.
And it's real.
And it's real. And it's not focused on manned exploration. It's focused on defense, on warfare.
With
on
technology.
How to defend the country.
Yep, with technology. I mean, we had a report a few weeks ago that China's developing systems to knock out our satellites,
yes,
if need be.
Yes.
But I'm sure we've got the same thing, don't we?
Oh, yes, we do. We absolutely do have such a thing, and it's a very aggressive program. Unlike the Chinese, we're a little smarter about when we test it, so we don't cause a lot of space junk and a lot of bad.
That's right.
They made a very bad mistake a few years ago by doing a anti-satellite test, which dumped an enormous amount of junk into the worst possible orbit.
They blew up one of their own, right?
Yeah. Well, yes, but it was a test. But the thing is, it was a stupid test because it only caused them enormous bad publicity, and it didn't really teach them that much. And now there's junk that could hit the ISS and a lot of other.
It's like the movie Gravity, for crying out loud.
Yeah, exactly.
Bob, hold on. We're going to take the break. We're coming up to the top of the hour. We'll come back with phone calls with Robert Zimmerman on climate change and space. You've got the number, and we'll be back in a moment.